You're listening to the Fantasy Football Astronauts.
We are the Fantasy Football Astronauts, and we are going to be reviewing division by division every team for the 2020 season. We're just going through over the projections here. So we're going to start with the AFC East, and Jay Moyer is here. Jay, just kind of give us your rundown on what's going on with the Patriots with all the opt-outs and everything there. Tell us what you're anticipating for this season.
Yeah, it's a tough one to project given so many moving parts. You have a new quarterback there with Cam Newton. Play caller still the same. And those are often the two most important factors for looking at how an offense is going to carry over, who's calling the plays and who the quarterback is. So we have Cam Newton, Josh McDaniels. Otherwise, you know, pretty similar returning supporting cast to last year, other than a couple rookie additions at tight end in Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene. So, you know, starting at the top, McDaniels tends to run a pretty fast-paced offense. Last year, the Patriots were fourth in total plays or plays per game. I expect that to continue. With Newton under center, McDaniels last year ran about 58% pass to run. Expect that to continue, but maybe a little more passing this year. They had a lot of losses on defense. Dont'a Hightower opted out. Patrick Chung opted out. They lost Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins, their two primary edge rushers last year. So I'm not sure their defense is going to be quite as stout as it was last year. You know, they were the number one defense by DVOA. So I think their passing percentage will go up. Cam Newton is going to attempt a lot of passes. I've projected for 609 attempts. You know, I think his efficiency will suffer a little bit because he's not the Cam Newton we know. At least we haven't seen that in terms of his health. And then just the increased, you know, frequency of passing tends to drive down efficiency a little bit, except for the best passing offenses. You know, that said, I think he's really underrated in terms of fantasy. I've even projected as my QB9. And, you know, in terms of ADP, he's going really in the bottom two thirds of quarterbacks, QB21. So really, you know, if you're waiting on a quarterback and you don't get Mahomes or Jackson early, he's a guy that you can wait a very long time. We're talking 14th, 15th, 16th round and get him and possibly a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, that's amazing just as far as how high you have Cam. But what do you think about the receivers? Is there anybody worth owning in this passing offense? You know, compared to past situations with the Panthers, you know, there's maybe one guy that had some relevance. Who are you looking at for the Patriots here?
Yeah, definitely. I'll run through those guys. Just want to say, I think his, Newton's projected points per game is bumped up, something I didn't mention, just by his rushing skill. You know, I've projected for 5 rushing touchdowns, 430 rushing yards, and that's huge in fantasy football, obviously, for a quarterback. But in terms of looking at the receivers, you know, you think back to those Carolina offenses, obviously Christian McCaffrey is targeted at a very high rate. A lot of short, quick passing. With Newton's shoulder, he struggled to push the ball down the field last year. You know, we'll see how healthy he is this year. But obviously, the two targets that stand out are Julian Edelman and James White. I have those guys projected as, you know, the top two targets, with Edelman getting 24% of the target share, White at 17%, both of them breaking 100 targets. Edelman actually up at 141. And Edelman's another guy that I think is really a great discount in fantasy. You know, at PPR, I haven't projected as the wide receiver 19, where he's going as wide receiver, you know, 30 to 33, really in the, you know, sixth or seventh round. And as wide receiver 19, I haven't valued more as a fourth or fifth round pick. So he's a guy that's on a lot of my teams. And then White, you know, he won't get the rushing volume as a runner, so he often falls quite a bit. RB 31, I have him ranked as RB 25. So, you know, another possible value there, just because I do think he's going to get the targets that McCaffrey saw a lot from Cam.
And so you noticeably left out N'Keal Harry. Is there any hope for dynasty players just as you're looking at N'Keal Harry?
It's interesting when you look at the Patriots offense last year when they traded Josh Gordon. Their passing offense really struggled because they didn't have a viable deep threat. No one could stretch the field. They brought in Sanu, who's a reliable underneath receiver, and could siphon some targets from those two guys I just mentioned. But no one who is explosive and really demands extra attention downfield. And Tom Brady's pass yardage per attempt dropped a yard and a half when they lost Gordon from 7.5 to 6. You know, his TD percentage went down from 4.3% to 3.6%. So their passing efficiency really tanked after that. And, you know, it's actually worse this year because they also lost Dorsett, you know, speedy receiver who can at least get downfield a little bit. Harry's really not that kind of guy. His downfield route running is not developed enough. He really struggled in that area last year. At this point, he's more of a screen, you know, end around sort of gadget guy, get the ball in his hands and let him work the open field. So I don't see him earning a large number of targets. And I think the targets he does earn, he's going to be inefficient unless he can show substantial improvement in his route running and his ability to separate.
All right, let's roll over to the Buffalo Bills. And they might have the opportunity to win the division this year with Josh Allen, who happens to be your QB10, running up right behind Cam Newton at QB9. Give us the rundown on what you're seeing for the Bills.
It hurts to have Josh Allen at QB10. You know, it's a relic of the fantasy scoring system for quarterbacks, sort of similar to what I mentioned for Cam, really, just the rushing volume. You know, have Allen projected for 514 yards and 7 rushing touchdowns, which is actually, you know, fewer touchdowns than he's had in his first 2 years, has 17 combined in his first 2 seasons, which, you know, takes some of the ceiling away from the running backs on this team, but really props up Allen as a really viable fantasy starter. As a passer, you know, I don't think that he is really an upper half NFL quarterback. He's yet to complete 60% of his passes. You know, his yards per attempt are bottom half in the NFL. He was 6.7 yards per attempt last year. I haven't projected for a little bit of improvement in efficiency with the addition of Stephon Diggs, but still not much to, you know, about 6.8 yards per attempt. So I don't think he'll be lighting it up from a passing standpoint, but just the rushing volume and production will really make up for it in his case.
And then so in terms of figuring out what's going on with this backfield, it looks like you have Moss ahead of Devin Singletary. Give us some of the details there into what went on from a fantasy standpoint. How is that happening? And then what are you seeing player to player in terms of each prospect, both of them being young, recent third round picks for the Bills?
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, very similar draft capital. So what I have projected is really a 50-50 split between those two guys. And I think, you know, in terms of the talent evaluation, the 50-50 split is really spot on. Both of these guys have, you know, certain elements of their game that make them very good committee back, but not quite good enough to be the lead back in a backfield. You know, Singletary, very elusive, you know, processes very quickly, has great vision, but, you know, he can make some undisciplined decisions and really has, you know, very little explosiveness in his game. Zach Moss also struggles with decision making. You know, had a tendency to really make some high risk bounce outs in college, but great contact balance, runs with great power when he gets upfield, can really drag tacklers, and is really a refined receiving back, which is not something you think of with those bigger guys. You know, sort of like Kareem Hunt, good route runner, very good hands. So I think that he really edges out Singletary in the fantasy points perspective, because I anticipate that he'll earn a larger target share, more of the receiving work.
And then lastly, how about Diggs? Is Josh Allen going to even be able to handle Diggs at all? One, from like an emotional standpoint, but also, isn't Diggs going to get fed up with a lot of the targets he's going to be getting?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a low-volume passing offense with an inaccurate downfield passing quarterback. I was really surprised actually last year at how much chemistry Allen showed with John Brown. You know, completed 62% of his passes to Brown at 9.2 yards per target. We'll see if that can continue, but I think Diggs and Brown are somewhat repetitive, and it'll be interesting to see how the target share splits between them two. I have them projected very similarly, with Diggs at 21%, Brown's at 20%. But I think it could go either way in terms of leading this offense. And yeah, you know, Diggs could get frustrated with both inaccurate targets and, you know, not having a ton of targets to go around.
Yeah, Diggs is an interesting guy. So for me, I'm a bit higher on him. I think the chemistry, well, it's all about volume, right? So the chemistry that Josh Allen showed with John Brown, I'm just going to basically apply that to Diggs and expect Diggs is capable of 1,000-yard season, maybe hitting that 8 touchdown range. And then John Brown, from a volume standpoint, I just got to drop him out a good amount. But, you know, I'm thinking talent is going to win out there, but I don't think, I think in general, downfield accuracy is overrated for quarterback play in terms of how much it's going to affect a receiver in fantasy terms. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see the way that everybody has to learn and adapt and move around there with Diggs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're that far off in terms of yardage. I have Diggs at 920 yards, fewer touchdowns just because I don't have Allen throwing a ton of touchdowns to go around. And it, you know, I think it could, there's a large window of potential outcomes with Diggs and Brown. You know, with the familiarity with both the system and the quarterback, I think it will help Brown, who I agree is, you know, the less talented of the two at this point, but I think it'll help him earn a substantial role. And, you know, I think there's enough for both of them to go around, just not enough volume to where, you know, they're both going to be top 15 or 20 receivers.
Yeah, it's interesting because you have Josh Allen at 520 attempts, and I got him down at 474. So I'm a little bit closer to his career average. And then Diggs, I'm given 127 targets. And so the big loser here is going to be like everybody else besides Diggs and John Brown. Cole Beasley, for me, he's not going to have a ton of volume, but it looks like you're giving him a good amount of targets. Is Cole Beasley a guy to look out for?
You know, I do think that both Diggs and Brown can really stretch the field, and that should open things up underneath. Allen is a little more effective as a short passer last year compared to his rookie season, really showed some growth there. So I do think Beasley and actually, you know, Dawson Knox, a sleeper at tight end, could really benefit. You know, I have them projected pretty close to their ADPs in terms of, you know, Beasley, I've projected at wide receiver 60. He's currently wide receiver 70. Knox, I have at tight end 30. He's tight end 29. But I think there is a little room there for outperforming those projections for both Beasley and Knox if, you know, the effect of Diggs and Brown is really a lot of too deep coverage and, you know, free running underneath.
Let's move it on down to Miami, another ascending team. And I think they've made some interesting improvements on the defensive side of the ball. What do you think of this team overall? Are they going to be able to get enough plays, or are they going to have enough offensive reps, enough offensive volume in order to generate any fantasy relevance? Is the offensive line moving up at all? Where are you on these Dolphin players?
Well, last year, actually, you know, they were more productive than I would have thought given the injuries they had, you know, the trades they made, the quarterback play. Devontae Parker really had the breakout season that everybody's been wanting him to have for a long time, and really a great fit with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I do think there's a little more fantasy potential here than people realize. It'll be interesting to see Chan Gailey coming back. You know, hasn't called plays since 2016 with the Jets. So it's been a while, and it'll be interesting to see how, you know, his philosophy in previous stops carries over here, where you have a lot of interesting guys with some hidden upside. You know, starting with Ryan Fitzpatrick, Chan Gailey really has decided he only wants to coach Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, over the last three teams that he's called plays for, Ryan Fitzpatrick has been the quarterback in Buffalo, you know, in New York, and now in Miami. So Fitz should really know the system well.
Yeah.
You know, it'll give him a leg up over Tua, who's recovering from the hip surgery and, you know, the weird offseason with COVID. So I expect Fitzpatrick to start. I do think Tua will get in there eventually. Have Fitzpatrick playing six games, Tua 10. You know, I think the team will be decent, but will probably start to fade out of contention around midseason. And so Parker with Fitzpatrick, you know, should have a you know, a chance to be a really exciting receiver, just as he was the second half of last year. But I think with, you know, Tua, who's more of a guy that looks for, you know, open receivers, whereas Fitzpatrick does a lot of pre-snap reads and doesn't mind, you know, throwing contested balls, that once Tua goes in, it really could hurt Parker unless Parker can, you know, show that he can separate a bit more consistently.
Yeah, and it looks like you have Parker and Preston Williams very close. So go into what's part of that process there, and then how is Preston Williams not way up high just in terms of ADP? Right now, Preston Williams is down at 54 and Devontae Parker's at 26. Are you buying Preston everywhere you can get him?
Yeah, so I mean, I think Preston Williams is the better player. You know, watching him on film last year for the first half of the season before he tore his ACL, you know, he was the starting X. He was the primary receiver. He really showed some nuance in terms of route running, but he's also, you know, a huge receiver, can play physically, make some contested catches, you know, high point the ball. So has a lot of things to like, a lot of different ways to beat you. And I think that if he is healthy and is able to play at 100%, he's a guy that really could ascend into being, you know, a top 10 receiver in the NFL if he continues to progress. The question I have about him and why, you know, his projection is not even higher is because of his knee and how well he'll recover, you know, how much, you know, how close he'll be to full speed. So I think because of that, I have Parker projected slightly ahead of him in terms of targets. I do think Williams will be a bit more efficient, have, you know, the most receptions on the team, and pretty close between the two in yards and touchdowns. But a lot of this really depends on, you know, how Williams' health plays out. And I think that how I have him projected, he's a huge bargain at the ADP of wide receiver 54. You know, I have him as wide receiver 29 in my rankings. And I think his ceiling is even higher than that. You know, we're talking top 20, top 15 receivers. Chan Gailey is a guy who's had a lot of good receivers when he's called offenses. You know, think back to Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker in New York. And he really feeds those guys. You know, top two or three guys on his team are going to get targeted pretty frequently. So I think both of those guys could see a good share.
I like it. So we're trusting the 40-year-old quarterback playing for the 85-year-old coach. That's for sure going to have some success. with Gesicki here, so a lot of dynasty players are on Gesicki right now. They think he's going to be the next big thing due to combine stuff or whatever, based on his college profile and how he's slowly developed. This going into his third year, his ADP is down at tight end 15, but you have him up at tight end 13. Last year he finished at tight end 12. Where do you see him just overall in terms of not just his rank, but his value as a player? What he brings to the table, and how does he fit into this offense with Parker and Preston, both theoretically healthy?
Yeah, I think it's better to think of him as a big slot receiver rather than a tight end. You know, you look at those Jets offenses that Gailey ran, and he's targeting the tight end at 4 or 5%, whereas the Dolphins tight ends were targeted 19% last year, you know, the bulk of that going to Gesicki. So I think he'll be more slotted in as the third target, more of a big slot receiver. The thing about Gesicki is that, you know, I think that he's good at tracking the ball in the air, you know, very athletic, good hands. But once he catches the ball, it really just has very little balance, goes down, you know, with any amount of contact. So what happens is he's not really a guy that you scheme to get the ball like George Kittle is in San Francisco. Kittle's probably not, you know, as skilled at plucking the ball to the air or a contested, you know, high point catch as Gesicki is, but he's so strong after the catch that when Shanahan's drawing up his offense, he's going to draw plays to get Kittle the ball in space. You're not going to do that with Gesicki, so I don't think the target volume will ever really be there, especially when you have Devontae Parker and Preston Williams on the team who are probably better high point, you know, contested catch receivers than Gesicki is. So I have him as the third option, and I really don't see a high ceiling, you know, of development when we talk about going forward in dynasty. I think that he's going to be sort of a middle of the pack tight end for the foreseeable future based on, you know, how I see his game.
And then moving on back to the backfield with Breida and Howard together in this tandem, it looks like you're way higher than ADP. So you've got these guys high and tight together, and you have Matt Breida ranked as RB23 and Jordan Howard at RB27. Give us the rundown there. How do you see this backfield shaking out? And it looks like 80 targets for Matt Breida. That's amazing. So yeah, give us your thoughts there on who's really who's the guy to be buying.
Well, when you look at Chan Gailey offenses, you know, almost universally he has a very clear pattern with how he uses his guys, and this is whether those guys were in those roles with other coaches or not. And so he usually has an early down back who doesn't get targeted that often but gets a good number of carries, in this case Jordan Howard, and then he'll have a third down back who, you know, doesn't have to be a guy that is necessarily thought of as a high volume receiver or a scat back, but Breida obviously fits that role given his injury history. Not someone you want to be pounding between the tackles, but, you know, very explosive, shown that he can catch the ball in San Francisco even though he wasn't targeted frequently. You know, he has good hands. He can run, you know, your basic swing routes and be there for the check downs and screens. But Gailey's offenses tend to feed the ball to a running back out of the backfield. And so if that trend continues, I think he has a lot of hidden potential, especially in those PPR formats. And like you said, you know, I have him in the, you know, bottom half of your starting running backs at RB23 when he's going as the 41st running back off the board. And I think in backfields like this, where you have two guys who are both a bit underrated, nobody's quite clear on how the split's going to shake out, that both guys suffer. And I think these backfields often are the times where you can really get a good bargain and make a pick very late in the draft that ends up winning you your league.
All right, I dig it. So speaking of winning, let's move to the last team on our list, a team that probably won't be doing very much winning at all. Is there anyone in the Jets offense that's worth any value?
Yeah, I think the Jets are interesting. I mean, you know, with Adam Gase, they're going to run at a very slow pace. He's always in the bottom third of plays run on offense, even though the guy always talks about wanting to run a lot of plays. So, you know, not a really exciting play caller here. Sam Darnold didn't progress at all from his rookie year to his sophomore season in terms of yards per target. I mean, yards per attempt, efficiency. You know, and I think that'll hold. We saw in Miami that Gase really couldn't develop Ryan Tannehill, who then went on to Tennessee and exploded. So I think it's going to be not a great offense overall, but I do think there are some hidden gems here, primarily Jamison Crowder. If you look at Gase offenses, the one thing that really stands out year over year is a slot receiver who produces more than you would think he would based on his name and or skill level. So, you know, I have Crowder as wide receiver 20, pulling down the bulk of the targets with a 25% target share, you know, 132 targets, 91 receptions. And, you know, he's going as wide receiver 41. So he's a guy that's on, you know, almost any fantasy team I'm going to be drafting. And then Denzel Mims is one of my favorite rookies, you know, an athletic freak, great size, great speed. But I think the technical aspects of his game are a bit overlooked. He showed at the Senior Bowl a really diverse array of, you know, releases against press man, was really unstoppable there. In college, he didn't see much press and, you know, ran a pretty basic route tree, but he did show the ability to manipulate in the stem and really, you know, in my opinion, is in the elite tier of deep ball trackers that I've seen. So I think that he can come in and sort of step into that Robbie Anderson role, really be a viable deep threat. I think a lot of people are assuming that Perriman will take on that role, but I think that Mims, you know, at least coming out of college, is a much more advanced route runner than Perriman is. And I think Perriman could struggle without sort of an elite scheme that he had in Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians designing the offense.
Yeah, that's an interesting differentiation from you and I. I think for me, a lot of the receiver position is about confidence. And seeing the way that Breshad performed down the stretch last year, I think he's going to take, at least mentally, he's ready to take the next step and achieve really what he's capable of doing. Maybe from a technical standpoint, Mims has some edge in terms of release work, but Perriman having the veteran advantage, I think, leans his way a little bit. So just in the way that I'm breaking up that receiving core, I have Perriman right behind Jamison Crowder. But I'm totally with you there on where Crowder is at in terms of his upside. I mean, wide receiver 20 is amazing value when he's fallen all the way down to wide receiver 41. You know, he's the Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, I mean, I think wide receiver 41 is below his floor. You know, I don't think his floor is wide receiver 20, but I have a hard time seeing him at the end of the season, if he's healthy, being the 41st highest receiving scorer in a PPR league. And, you know, when it comes to Perriman, you know, I could see it shaking out how you have it, and I think how most people have it. The big question for me is how often Gase will be able to protect him from seeing press coverage, because I've seen him really struggle to separate against press. You know, not great array of release moves or great technique. And Bruce Arians, one thing they did a lot of was really compress their sets, move guys around. He's running Perriman, you know, underneath on crossing routes, you know, really creating that separation for him. And then, you know, he is a big, physical, fast receiver. So if he can get that manufactured separation, you know, very dangerous. And so the biggest thing I worry about is just, I haven't seen Adam Gase be able to really scheme guys open as, you know, Bruce Arians would or Kyle Shanahan would.
Smart. Brilliant. Tell me about Le'Veon Bell and where you're seeing this backfield shake out. I know Frank Gore will never die. Is he going to kill Le'Veon Bell's fantasy value?
I mean, I do think that he takes a little bit of the volume upside for Bell, especially on the ground. Everybody wants him to go away. I think that he's just so reliable and so sound, and a guy that Adam Gase has shown that he's willing to give the ball to, even when he has a more talented back behind him. You know, you think back to Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore in Miami. So I have Gore getting around 100 carries, most of those coming from what Le'Veon got last year, where I have him now projected for 200 carries, 800 yards. But Bell, I think, is saved in a PPR format by just the receiving volume. You know, I have him at getting 80 targets, 68 receptions, 500 yards. So still sort of, you know, where he's going in terms of ADP in that third tier of running backs. And really, it's just the receiving skill that helps hold him up there.
Yeah, that 200 carry stat line is absolutely brutal compared to what he's capable of doing. I think when you watch the film on Le'Veon Bell, he still looks good, right? He's still got it. It's just the offensive line sucks. and I know that they're returning. Yeah. I think they're replacing all five guys or something like that. So there's a lot of turnover there. It'll be interesting to see if he can take a step forward from his like 3.4 or 3.7 yards per carry, whatever that was last season. You have him up 4.0. I think that's reasonable. You know, it's almost like it can't be worse than it was last season.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Gase offenses, you never are really that surprised at how low the floor can go. So
right, yeah,
we'll see, I guess.
Lastly, Chris Herndon. I know a lot of people love him as a deep sleeper. Just give us a comment there on Herndon and what you're expecting.
Yeah, I think the real hope for him, you know, obviously he had a great rookie year. Last year missed almost the entire season after, you know, getting a substance abuse suspension and then dealing with injuries. And so we'll see if he can turn things around in terms of being a guy that will reliably be on the field. But if he can, you know, siphon off some of that slot receiving work, he's a guy that could potentially impact Crowder's role. Right now I have Crowder as the clear slot preference with, you know, Herndon earning the second share as, you know, a low end tight end, you know, tight end 20. But if Herndon can really, you know, be a more physical seam stretching option, I could see that playing out a little bit differently where, you know, Herndon is getting, you know, whereas I haven't projected at 72 targets, you know, approaching 80, 90 targets and really working his way up into being a top 10 tight end.
I dig it. All right. Well, that is the rundown of the AFC East here with the Fantasy Football Astronauts. Make sure that you like and subscribe, and we will be coming at you with more division breakdowns in the future.